The Colonial Sun, written by Peter Watt and read by Rupert Degas. It was a nightmare. Through the telescope, 15-year-old Josiah Steele stared across the river inlet at the giant prehistoric beast slithering down the riverbank into the tropical waters. He gripped the coastal steamer's handrail with white-knuckled intensity as it docked at the newly established port of Cooktown, catering to the thousands of people who had arrived from every part of the world to seek their fortunes at the inland Palmer River goldfields. "Look, Father," Josiah passed the telescope to the man beside him, Ian Steele, former British Army officer who had served under the assumed name of Samuel Forbes through campaigns from the Crimean War to the New Zealand Wars. He had also led his company of infantrymen across the deserts of Persia and fought in the Indian Rebellion with courage and distinction. He was in his mid-50s, yet had the appearance of a man much younger, retaining the bearing of a soldier. His hair was greying, but his eyes were clear. Ian's body was still hard from his active life, and his shoulders still had the broadness of a man who had learned his trade as a blacksmith in the colony of New South Wales as a mere youth.
"Gator,"
Ian grunted, as the great beast slid beneath the waters bordered by a mangrove embankment.
"No," his son corrected. "The colony does not have alligators. The creature is a crocodile and has a fearsome reputation as a man-eater. I wish Samuel and Rebecca were here to view the beast," Josiah sighed. His siblings were under the care of an army of nannies and servants back in Sydney, while Josiah had been allowed to accompany his father north on an adventure. For Josiah, his life had changed dramatically when his father and mother, who had crossed the world and the colonies in search of him after he was spirited out of England as a child, had finally found him. Now he had his dear brother and sister, and an outstanding academic record at his prestigious private school, but still carried a keen sense that it could all disappear at any moment, like they had lost his mother. The grief had been overwhelming for his father and siblings, and while Josiah had felt the pain, he suppressed his feelings with stoic resolution as time progressed. He sensed that his father knew of his grief, and the sea journey to Northern Australia was intended to provide a form of therapy.
"Ah, I think I can see our welcoming party," his father said, leaning forward on the railing to gaze across the wharf,
busy with men preparing to unload the precious cargo of luxuries transported from Sydney to Brisbane. The sun beat down, and a haze of heat and dust rose from the landscape, which only a week earlier had been mud at the end of the wet season. Josiah was taken by the primitive appearance of the timber buildings lining the main street just up from the wharf, such a contrast to the relative sophistication of civilization in Sydney. He could also see that some of the rough-looking would-be miners carried firearms and was reminded of stories he'd read about the American frontier. He also noticed many ragged men clamoring at the wharf, crying for a berth to anywhere out of Cooktown. It did not bode well.